नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances under the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Nada Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. This morning we're reading from Canto 3 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 26, text number 18. Mukham Kroti Vachalam Bhagam Langayate Grimya Kripadaram Mande Sri Gurundina Tadanam. There was a disciple of a Mayavadi guru. These Matajis are trying to come in. So one day this disciple, he had this stunning realization that he was the absolute. So he came before his guru, as Mayavadis do when they become realized. Then they come to their guru and say, goodbye. Thank you very much. Today I have understood all that you have been teaching. I realize I am God, so now there is no more need for guru. So then guru gave his blessings to disciple, disciple gave his blessings to guru, and because now they're both Narayan, and then the disciple went on his way. So then this person was walking through a marketplace, bazaar. And there was a shout from up ahead in the crowd, make way for the elephant. And so the people stood back on either side of the pathway to allow the passage of a big elephant that was being driven by a rider on its back. So the rider was calling out, make way, make way. Don't stay in front of the elephant. So this Mayavadi, he thought, but now I'm God. So why should I stand aside for anyone? Let the elephant stand aside for me. So he continued walking straight ahead, and the elephant was coming to him. And instead of the elephant standing aside, the elephant with his long nose simply swept him out of the path. He went flying into some stalls in the bazaar, breaking his arm and leg and sending vegetables flying everywhere. So the next day he returned to his guru. Now he was a little more humble. And his arm was in a sling and he was walking with crutch. And he said, Guru Maharaj, you have to explain what happened to me. I cannot understand. Yesterday I understood I was God. But then He related all that happened in the marketplace. So please, Guru Maharaj, tell me, how is it that if I'm God, as you've been telling me all these years, how is it that this elephant could push me out of the way like that? And the Guru said, didn't you hear God on top of the elephant telling you to get out of the way? When God on the elephant tells God in the path to get out of the way, then God in the path should move aside. So this story illustrates, of course, the general absurdity of Mayavadi philosophy. But it also illustrates another thing. That if we do not heed God in the heart, the lessons of God in the heart, not on top of the elephant, but the real God, the Chaitya Guru, the Super Soul, and how is it that we will not heed him? For instance, if we think that I am that God, you see, this is the Mayavadi conclusion, that there is only one soul, one all-pervading soul, and I am that soul. So there is no super soul above me to direct me. I direct myself, if I understand I'm God. So in that way, one tries to X out, cross out the existence of the super soul. So he thereafter acts on his own false ego. So as soon as we give up the direction of Paramatma and act under false ego, then we are subject to punishment by the time factor. Here in this verse, anta purusha rupena, within is the purusha rupa, the form of Paramatma. Anta means within, inside the heart. And kala rupena yo bahi, and bahi means outside. So outside is the same Lord in the form of kala rupa, time. So if I do not surrender to the Lord within, then I will be punished by the Lord without in the form of time. In that story we just told, the elephant represents time. Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he says, kalo asmi, I am time. And he declared to Arjuna that he had come to devour all those soldiers on the battlefield of Kurukshetra who had not surrendered to him. Of course, time devours all material forms, including even the physical body of a devotee. But a devotee doesn't take the appearance of time as something to fear. Prabhupada told of his days during the war, the Second World War in Calcutta. So in 1944, the Japanese came from Burma, which is not far from Bengal, the next country to the east. The Japanese had conquered Burma, so they came over from there in their airplanes to bomb Calcutta. And Srila Prabhupada was taking kachuris when the Japanese bombers came overhead. Now, when Srila Prabhupada was a little boy, his mother used to call him Kachuri Muki, because his mouth, Muki means mouth, his mouth always had a kachuri in it. He was very fond of eating kachuris. So Srila Prabhupada was looking from the window at the bombs exploding in the city of Calcutta. But he would not leave aside his kachuris. He continued to eat. And he explained in one lecture that he saw this devastation, this appearance of devastating time, bombs exploding, buildings collapsing. He saw this as the universal form of Krishna. So, a devotee, knowing that time is Krishna, if time comes to take away this body, Prabhupada said, the devotee thinks, here is my Lord. He's not like the materialist who cries out in horror, oh, I'm dying. But the devotee actually welcomes this appearance of the Lord, because the devotee knows, now the Lord is taking me with him. So the devotee knows that time is the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the devotee is always in transcendental consciousness, even in this material world. But as Srila Prabhupada explained in a lecture, for one in material consciousness, time acts in another way. Prabhupada explained this in a very interesting manner. He said that time is the prime factor of relativity. So this world, material world, is called the relative world. So let's understand what that means. This world is full of vishesha. Vishesha means particular features. I think you can detect that vishesha and nirvishesha are opposites, because in nirvishesha, impersonal Brahman, there are no particular features. So in this world there are so many unlimited, all around us, particular features of matter. And they're all relative. So now what does this mean? For instance, here we're in a particular room in this house, the temple room.
Hmm.
Now, how do I know that this room that I'm in is not the guest room upstairs where I take rest at night? Now, you might answer that, well, that the prime factor of difference is that this room and that room obviously look different. But you could make this room look like that room. You see, I could be fooled. You could rearrange this room, repaint it, whatever, put beds in it, and make me think that I'm in the room upstairs. So these particular features that we observe, they change. So it is not very sure that we can understand the difference between things just on that basis, the difference between this room and that room, because the features are always changing. In that way, we understand that there's a relative relationship, but it's the actual, as Prabhupada said, the prime factor, the clear factor that shows us the difference, is that there is a difference in space and time between this room and that room. I know that this room is different because to come to this room, I have to leave my room and walk a certain distance, and it takes a certain amount of time, and then I'm here.
Já vím, že tahle místnost je jiná, protože musím nejdřív přejít z tamté místnosti a určitou vzdálenost a zabere to určitý čas.
How do we know that Berlin is a different city from Prague?
Jak víme, že Berlin je jiné město než Praha?
Maybe they're just districts of the same city. It's just a huge, big city. One side is Prague, the other side is Berlin, like Budapest. You know, Buddha is on one side of the river, Pest is on the other. Well, we know that it takes many hours to go from Prague to Berlin. So clearly they're different. So this is why Srila Prabhupada says time is the prime factor of relativity. Time separates everything from everything else. Time and space. In Einstein's theory, he says space-time. They're features of the same tattva, the same principle. To move through space takes time. And so that is, again, the primary factor of relativity, the primary difference between all things in this world. Did everyone understand this? I don't think it's that hard. So, now, what's important for us, the most important thing for us to appreciate, is that because we're in material consciousness, time has separated us from Krishna. But actually, that's unreal. That's why this is all called, this relative world is called the world of Maya, illusion.
Proto se tento relativní svět nazývá svět máji nebo iluze.
Because actually we are not separated from Krishna.
Skutečnosti nejsme odděleni od Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada, we just heard him explain that in the purport. That Krishna is with us in the heart. As Anumanta and Upadrashta, as the witness and the permitter. But because we are, as I said yesterday, we are clinging to false ego. So false ego covers us. And thus we become subject to the separation of the time factor.
Tím způsobem se stáváme předmětem oddělení prostřednictvím časového faktoru.
So now, remembering this explanation of time and relativity, this will help us to understand the meaning of absolute. There is the relative world and the absolute world. The absolute world is the spiritual world. And the spiritual world is, everything in the spiritual world is said to be non-different. And yet there are varieties. So this is difficult to grasp. How can there be differences or variety, how can there be variety in the spiritual world and yet that spiritual world is absolute? And the answer is that the varieties, the spiritual varieties, are not separated by time. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, by Sri Sanatan Goswami, we see it's a very wonderful description of the elevation of a devotee by his chanting the holy name of the Lord. So this devotee, whose name is Gop Kumar, he begins chanting the holy name in Jagannath Puri. And as his consciousness becomes pure by his chanting, he finds himself in the transcendental Dwarka Dham. Now he, of course, passes through many levels, including up through the heavenly planets and beyond the universe and Shiva Loka and Vaikuntha Loka. And finally, he is in Dwarka, in the spiritual world. But because Gop Kumar is by his spiritual nature a resident of Vrindavan. Although he's there with Krishna in Dwarka, he's somehow or other not quite satisfied. So he's wondering why. And Narada Muni goes everywhere. So Narada Muni, on this occasion, came to the spiritual Dwarka, and Gop Kumar wanted to know from Narada Muni, why is it that somehow I don't feel completely satisfied here?
Gop Kumar nechápal, proč to je, a Narada Muni, který cestuje všude, tak přišel na tohle místo a on se tam zeptal Gop Kumar, Narada Muni, proč nejsem tak spokojený?
And Narada Muni said, because you are by nature a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And then Gop Kumar, naturally, he wanted to know, well, how can I attain my natural position? And Narada Muni said, well, you actually cannot enter Vrindavan from here, from Dvorka. The mood is different. I think you know that the mood in Dvorka Dham is more of awe and reverence, because there Krishna is king. Whereas in Vrindavan Dham, Krishna is a cowherd boy. He's everyone's friend, everyone's dear most beloved object. So Narada Muni told Gop Kumar, you'll have to go back to the earth planet and chant in Vrindavan Dham there, Raja Bhumi. Now, we might think, oh, what is this? This sounds like falling down the old question. How does the jiva fall down to the material world? It sounds like he would have to go a very, very long way from the spiritual world down to the earth planet, to Vrindavan here. So Gop Kumar wanted to know, naturally, well, how will I do this? How will I get there? I'm here. Narada Muni said, close your eyes. They closed his eyes, and then he heard Narada Muni say, now open them. When he opened his eyes, he was in Vrindavan on the earth. So this is the meaning of absolute. There was no separation of time. And here's a very nice example that there's no separation of time between the so-called earthly Vrindavan, the one in India, and the spiritual world. They're the same place. And that is so wonderfully demonstrated at the end of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Because Gop Kumar, then he chanted the holy name of the Lord there in Brajabhumi, earthly Vrindavan. And then at one point he met Lord Krishna. And the cowherd boys and the cows. And Krishna took him home with him. It doesn't say that, you know, he found himself going again to another place. He left earthly Vrindavan and traveled through time and space and finally came to the spiritual Vrindavan. What Sanatan Goswami explains is that he simply became conscious of Krishna's pastimes happening right there. So Krishna brought him home and took his lunch with Gop Kumar. And so in this way Gop Kumar's pastimes with Krishna began. So this is the meaning of absolute. This is a very easy way to understand. Absolute variety. There is variety in the spiritual world, but it is not separated by time. And just as there is no separation of time and space between earthly Vrindavan now and the eternal spiritual Vrindavan, so there is also no difference between the Sankirtan movement as it is perceived now on this earth and Lord Chaitanya's eternal lila. There is a statement from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anna piha se lila kari goroi kona kona bhagyavan deki bara hoy, which means that those devotees who are bhagyavan, means very fortunate, and they can see Gaura Lila, Lord Chaitanya's Lila, right now, here. There's no separation of space and time. It's not that Lord Chaitanya showed his pastimes 500 years ago and were separated from them by 500 years. But kona kona bhagyavan, one must be bhagyavan, fortunate to understand that. If one is not fortunate, then one thinks that there is this separation of time. So how does one become fortunate? So there was once a scholar named Sanka, a Brahmin in South India. And he was walking along the bank of the Godavari River when suddenly a robber accosted him. And this robber he had a very evil, threatening look about him. So Sanka asked the robber, "What do you want from me?" And the robber said, "I want your wealth. If you give it to me, fine. If you don't, then I'll take your life also." And the Sanka said, "But I'm a Brahmin. I don't have anything." And the robber said, "You clever rascals, you always are hiding something. Let me see." So the Brahmin had a kavacha here. The robber took it. "Give me this." And then the robber was feeling along this fold on the waist of the dhoti. He was feeling, and then he felt a couple coins. "Ha ha!" And he took those. Then he took away his top cloth, left him only his dhoti. And finally he took his sandals too. And then he let him go. So this Brahmana had been walking along the sandy bank of the Godavari River in the middle of the day, so the sand was very hot, and without sandals his feet were burning. So the poor Brahmin, he was reduced to having to take off his dhoti and just be in his underwear and use the dhoti is a kind of cover for his feet. So he would walk the distance of his dhoti, then pick it up and put it in front of him again and walk. Because the sand was simply too hot. So from a distance, that robber, he saw the Brahmin doing this. And he felt some compassion. So he came back and he returned the sandals. So the Brahmin said, "You know, you're not so bad as you look." And then the Brahmin said, "Actually, you know, I have some power. I am Trikalagya. I can see your past life and your next life." So then the robber, he became very curious. "Yeah, please tell me, what was I in my past life?" And the Brahmin said, "In your past life, you were also a Brahmana. And you were, in the early part of your life, you were quite pious. But then after you got married and settled down, you somehow or other developed an interest in prostitutes. So, although you were going to prostitutes and spending all your money in that way, your wife, your Brahminical wife, was very faithful to you. So much so that even when you were dying of some disease that you got from a prostitute. So, your wife was taking care of you. And she one day, just at the end of your life, she was putting some medicine in your mouth, some Ayurvedic medicine. And you were so mad from this disease, all this pain, and you even bit off her finger. But still, she was so faithful that she prepared the funeral pyre, it's called, where they burn the body. And she also, she did sati, she got on the funeral pyre herself and gave up her life along with you. So because of your sins from that life, you had to take birth in this condition as a robber. But your piety from that life, because you were once a good Brahmin and also you had such a chaste wife, so this piety has resulted in your meeting me today. And in your next life, you will take another low birth as a hunter, but you will meet the seven sages, the Saptarishis. And they will deliver you from all your sinful reactions. So sure enough, in the next life, this robber, he took birth as a hunter. Actually, his father was a sage, but his mother was a what is called Nagakanika, a serpent, one of these mystical serpents which also can take human form. So the mother, after she gave birth to the boy, left him in the forest and he was raised by hunters. So he took a wife as when he grew up and had many children. And he found that he had so many children that it was too difficult to maintain them simply by hunting. So again, he became a robber. You know, so like sometimes men take a second job. So not only was he killing animals, but also any person who walked through the forest, he would make sure to remove whatever wealth they had. So one day he happened to see 7 shining persons coming down the forest path. Now he couldn't remember the statement of the Brahman from previous life. So he just thought, ha, today I'm really lucky. Now there's not only one traveler, there's 7. I can rob them all. So he stood on the path in front of them with his bow and arrow, the arrow just ready, and he said, stop and give me all your wealth. And they were very gentle to him. They said, there's no need for you to be aggressive. We have actually come here just to give you all we have. So then he became doubtful. He lowered his bow. Oh, really? No, nobody ever said that to me before. And they said, yes, but in order for you to receive all that we have, you have to answer us one question, or answer a few questions. We have a few questions you should answer. So our first question is, why are you committing all these sins? You live by killing animals, which is extremely sinful. And not only that, you've become a robber too. So as a result of all these sins, you are destined by your karma to go to hell. There are very severe reactions waiting for you. Now, why are you doing this? And then he said, well, I have a wife, I have 8 children, and a 9th one on the way. So I'm the man of the house, I have to maintain all this. And the sages said, all right, very well. Now, will your wife and children accept a portion of your sinful activities? You're committing all these sins for them. So, if you propose to them that all your sins will be divided into, let us say, 10 parts, including the child on the way. Would your family consent to each one of them taking one of these 10 parts? Leaving you with only 1/10 of your sinful reactions. And he said, well, I don't know, I never considered this. I'll go home and ask them. And the sages said, yes, we'll wait right here. So then he went home and he explained that he'd met 7 saintly persons and they had put this question. So please, my dear wife, my dear children, what is your answer? And their answer was, no, we won't take your sinful reactions. So then he was very shocked by this.
Velice
he was thinking, what is this family life for then? I thought they loved me, I thought I loved them, I thought we were all in this together. Now I see they're simply selfish rascals. And I guess that means I'm also a selfish rascal. So then, in great shame and humility, he returned to the sages and he said, they're not going to take any of my sinful reactions. So then the sages, they said, so, don't you feel that this is a most terrible situation you're in? And he said, yes, it is horrible. And needlessly, uselessly, I've committed so many sins. So then the sages said, so we have come today to give you the way to relieve yourself of all sinful reactions. And the hunter said, oh, that I can understand now is the most valuable thing. What should I do? And they said, so, you have lived by death, by killing so many creatures. So in Sanskrit, one form of the word for death is mara. So the sages say, so you just sit down here, but don't do anything else and just chant mara. So he did that and he was chanting mara 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 mara. And he kept chanting for so long that the ants, they built a hill around him. Big ant hill. So in Sanskrit, an ant hill is called Valmika. So the sages, they came later after this ant hill had grown up around him. And they swept away because they said, now you have become purified of all your sins. You're a Muni, a sage. And because you became a sage in the midst of a Valmika, you are Valmiki. So this is, we'll continue with the story, but just as a footnote, this is how one becomes fortunate. By sadhusanga, good association. So Valmiki Muni continued to always chant the holy name of Ram. And this attracted more good fortune. Later Narada Muni came to him. And in the course of his Valmiki's putting questions to Narada Muni, Narada Muni narrated the whole Ramayana. So this narration went right into Valmiki's heart. And after that, he was always remembering the wonderful Leela of Lord Ramachandra. And he became obsessed by this. So one day he was underneath the tree chanting the holy name, and there were two birds, male and female birds, in the tree above him. And suddenly a hunter fired an arrow which killed the male bird.
Jednoho dne seděl pod stromem, zpíval svaté jméno a nad ním byl párek ptáků. Najednou přišel lovec a jeho šíp zastřelil toho samce.
And the female bird began to cry very piteously.
A ta samička ptačí začala žalostně naříkat.
So Valmiki, this is very wonderful because he had been a hunter himself before. So he was so distressed by this that he angrily cursed that hunter. And he said, "You sinful man who kills innocent birds while they sit together in the tree, may you perish." Now when he said this curse, the curse came out of him in a very beautiful poetic form. He was very surprised, because formerly he had just been a hunter. He had nothing to do with poetry. So he was, after that, he was thinking very deeply. How did this happen? And he was also feeling quite bad because he thought, this is such beautiful Sanskrit poetry, but it came out of my mouth in the form of a curse. And the first rule of Sanskrit poetry is that the subject should be auspicious, not inauspicious. A curse is inauspicious. So he was distressed by this. Then Lord Brahma appeared before him. And Brahma explained that beautiful poetic verse in a completely different way. That because in Sanskrit is such a highly developed language that many, many meanings can be derived from the different combination of words according to application of different rules.
Sanskrit je tak úžasný jazyk, že mnoho významů se dá vyvodit ze skupení nějakých slov použití různých gramatických pravidel.
So Brahma said, actually, this verse you recited, it's not a curse.
A Brahma řekl, ten verš, který jsi pronesl, vlastně není kletba.
This verse is the lamentation of Manodhari, the wife of Ravana.
Ten verš je nářek manželky Ravany.
When she saw her husband killed by Lord Ram. So then Brahma blessed Valmiki that you will recite thousands and thousands of verses depicting the pastimes of Lord Ram. So in this way Valmiki Muni became the composer of the Ramayana. And what is most wonderful, coming to this point about absolute, is that Valmiki Muni, one day he was in his ashram, he had composed the Ramayana, and one day Sita Devi from the Ramayana came to his ashram. And Sita Devi explained that she had been sent away by her husband, Lord Ram, because, as you may know, after Sita was returned to Ayodhya, then there was some talk. One person in the city was having trouble with his wife. His wife was not of good behavior. So he was asking a friend, "What should I do with my wife? She's not faithful to me." And he said, "Well, you know, this is Ayodhya. Even Lord Ram, you know, even his wife Sita she went away with another man, but he took her back. So I suppose you should do the same, even though it may not be according to strict religious principles. So Lord Ramchandra overheard this. He would travel through the city in disguise just to hear what his subjects were speaking of. So he decided that the people's respect for me as king is diminished because I took my wife back. So he had Lakshman take her to the ashram of Valmiki Muni. So this time she was pregnant. So later she gave birth to two sons, Lava and Kusha. And Valmiki Muni, he trained them in the Ramayana. They became expert reciters of the Ramayana. And so when they got a little older, when they were teenage boys, Lava and Kusha went back, they went to Ayodhya, and they recited the Ramayana for Lord Ramchandra. So it's very wonderful how Valmiki, by his service to the Ramayana, by receiving it from his spiritual master and realizing it and then composing it, he became part of the Ramayana. Sometimes this confuses persons that if Valmiki was the author of Ramayana, how is it that he's inside the Ramayana too, playing a part? And this again illustrates the nature of the Absolute. So if we serve the Vani, the eternal message of Godhead in the Sankirtan movement, one day we will find ourselves within the Leela of Lord Chaitanya. Just as Valmiki Muni, he was a hunter, a robber, but by saintly association, he began to serve the Vani, the eternal message of Godhead in the form of Ramayana. And then he became part of Ramayana. Srila Prabhupada even once said that the activities of ISKCON are the later chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very nice. Grantrad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Are there any questions? No? Yes.
Actually, that's what my son asks, is our Kurus on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna killed everybody who did not surrender to him. Does it mean they were all demons?
Translate.
Všichni na Kurukšetře, jak se říkalo, že Krishna tam bol, ti všichni, kdo se mu neodezdali zabije, tak znamená to, že všichni byli démoni?
Well, some of them were certainly influenced by the demoniac nature.
Někteří byli jistě ovlivněni démonskou povahou.
But all of them were, of course, most fortunate to be in Krishna's presence when they left their bodies. Grandfather Bhishma was not a demon. He's a pure devotee. But Prabhupada, sometimes Prabhupada says that he was influenced by Duryodhana. Duryodhana is sometimes said to, actually in Mahabharata, he's said to be a manifestation of the personality of Kali, another form of Kali. So, Grandfather Bhishma ended up on the other side in opposition to Arjuna because, as Prabhupada said, of some apparent influence of Duryodhana. But ultimately, that's the pastime of the Lord and His devotees. Any other question?
Is it explain how one can transfer himself to the Krishna Lila here in the material world?
Well, Krishna will take care of that. There's no way you can do it. You simply should serve Krishna. Then the connection is established from your side. The connection from Krishna's side is already there. But we have to reconnect ourselves to Krishna through devotional service. Okay. Yes.
From the description, it seems that this connection with Krishna can be done only in Vrindavan somehow from this story. And now you explain that the Gaura Lila can be felt anywhere.
Yes.
Whenever.
Yes. That's Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Prithiviti yati yati nagarari gram. Lord Chaitanya says, in every town and village on the whole earth, my name will be chanted. So by Lord Chaitanya's grace, in this age of Kali, it is only by Lord Chaitanya's grace that one has any hope to enter into Krishna Lila. Whether you're in Vrindavan or not, it is through Lord Chaitanya's grace. So, Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that he's spread his grace around the whole world in the form of this movement. Yes.
Is it some similarity between the story of Gopumar? It was in different moods, different places. Is it that there are different moods in different temples and there are some similar changes?
Well, there are always differences also in the spiritual realm. It is full of variety. So the answer is yes. There's a difference between you and the devotee next to you. But that doesn't mean that one of you must be a demon.
Yeah.
Yes, you had a question.
If you can give some advice for a reading program, because I have some problem with permanent reading of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a problem with permanent eating program? You do. You have a problem with permanent, I said eating.
Eating.
Yeah. So you're also not eating every day?
Yeah, differently.
Differently. But every day you're eating.
Yeah.
Different times of the day, maybe. So why not different times of the day, every day, reading? If you can eat every day, why can't you read every day? We know the answer. The answer is, when one thinks he's his body, then eating is very important. He'll never give that up. But because of that conception, I'm the body, and not being clear on the real fact that I'm the soul, he does not read every day. Reading every day is feeding the soul. But if you think you're the body, you think it's more important to feed the body. So this is, it's simply a question of nourishment. To be spiritually nourished, to spiritually grow, we must read Srila Prabhupada's books. So you have no trouble with feeding the body, so we should similarly have no trouble with feeding the soul. What else can I say? It's 9 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His question is that we learn that we're not the body, and so we push our senses, our mind, in service, but we push them until we fall down. So how to find the balance? So this is the way this question is phrased. You can hear in it this is the expression of the external conception. Bhakti means internal devotion.
Bhakti înseamnă devoțiune interioară.
That we are thinking of pleasing Krishna by our activities.
Noi ne gândim să-L mulțumim pe Krishna prin activitățile noastre.
Not that we are simply pushing our senses and mind in some work.
Nu să ne împingem mintea și simțul într-o anumită activitate.
This is the Shudra's activity.
Asta este activitatea de Shudra.
They just work.
Ei doar muncesc.
But like the horses with his blinders, you see. They don't have a clear vision of where they're going. So bhakti, the essence of bhakti, is to please
Krishna.
To be thinking of Krishna while I do my service. So we have to be thinking what pleases Krishna.
Ceea ce îl mulțumește pe Krishna.
Krishna is not just pleased by work.
Krishna nu e mulțumit doar de muncă.
But there's a mood, a flavor.
Ci este o manieră, o savoare.
A flavor of love.
o savoare a iubirii.
And that love, actually, Krishna declares that one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. One who's a devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. So that love extends to the other devotees.
Și Krishna spune, cel care este devotul, devotul meu este devotul meu. Deci această iubire a lui Krishna se extinde.
So that means one's devotional service is directed to the other devotees.
Și prin urmare, acest serviciu devoțional este direcționat către alți devoți.
I serve the Vaishnavas.
Eu îi servesc pe Vaishnava.
In this way I serve Krishna.
Și în felul acesta îi servesc pe Krishna.
And I serve the Vaishnavas in love.
Când îi servesc pe Vaishnava în iubire.
But if we just think it's work, just that I do X amount of work.
Dacă am făcut o anumită, știu, cantitate X de muncă.
And there, I've done it. Now no one can tell me anything.
Am terminat, deci nimeni nu poate să-mi spună nimic.
And this is, you know, ISKCON temple is not meant to be a factory. This is the attitude of the factory workers. They go in 7 o'clock in the morning and they beat so many pieces of metal or whatever they have to do. And then at 4 o'clock they're done. And no one can tell them anyone. They're very proud. I am a worker.
Nimeni nu le poate spune nimic. Sunt foarte mândri. Eu sunt un muncitor.
And then they think everything is owed to them.
Și prima consideră că totul li se cuvine.
I did my work.
Mi-am făcut treaba.
And then whenever there's any problem in society, they become very indignant. What is this?
Ce înseamnă asta?
I'm a worker.
Sunt un muncitor.
You have to give me what I deserve for my work. Otherwise, I will make revolution. So you know about this movement very well. This is a shudra attitude.
Attitudine de shudra.
So we have to, that shudra means spiritual, material conditioning. We have to come to the spiritual platform.
Shudra înseamnă condiționarea materială, trebuie să ajungem la platforma spirituală.
We have to be thinking of what pleases Krishna.
Trebuie să ne gândim ce mulțumește pe Krishna.
And we have to be considering very deeply, and what I'm doing right now, is that pleasing to Krishna?
Ceea ce fac eu acum să-l mulțumesc pe Krishna.
And for instance, if I may be doing my work, but if I'm neglecting my relationship with other devotees, or offending them, giving them trouble, I'm not pleasing Krishna.
Trebuie să mă gândesc că dacă îmi fac treaba, dar în timpul ăsta îi ofensez pe ceilalți devoți sau neglijez relația mea cu ceilalți devoți, nu-l mulțumesc.
And if I'm giving trouble to Krishna's servants, the Vaishnavas, I am sure to fall down.
Sau dacă dau necaz Vaishnavilor, servitorilor Krishna, atunci cu siguranță voi căde.
And it's not, and balance does not mean, well, all right, I will please them, but they have to please me. That's the balance.
Balance nu înseamnă echilibru, nu înseamnă, oh, eu îi mulțumesc pe ei și prima și ei trebuie să mă mulțumească pe mine.
This is another mundane concoction.
Asta e din nou o concepție lumească.
Devotional service is unconditional.
Serviciul devoțional este necondiționat.
My satisfaction must be that I am a servant of the Lord and His devotees.
Satisfacția mea trebuie să fie aceea că eu sunt servitorul Domnului și a devoților săi.
If the Lord kicks me in the face, dacă that's wonderful.
Domnul mă lovește în față, asta e minunat.
That's what Lord Chaitanya says.
Asta a spus Domnul Chaitanya.
Ashlisha va pararitim panashtumam adarshanamam. He declares in his last Shikshashtika prayers that Krishna may come to embrace me, or may he may step all over me.
Krishna poate să ajungă să mă îmbrățișeze sau poate să mă calce peste mine.
But in either case, mat prana nata tu sa eva napara. He is the Lord of my life.
Dar indiferent în ambele cazuri este Domnul vieții mele.
So, are you ready to do this? You don't know, so. If you don't know, then you're going to continue to have trouble in devotional service. Until we come to that point, we will continue to have trouble in devotional service.
Până când nu ajungem la acest punct de a fi gata să facem acest lucru ce a spus Domnul și Chaitanya, vom avea necazul în serviciul nostru devoțional.
So the answer to your question is that you make yourself trouble by not surrendering to Lord Chaitanya's order.
Răspunsul la întrebare este acela că nu îți faci necazul pentru că nu te-ai predat instrucțiunii Domnului Chaitanya.
When we insist in having our own opinion,
când insistăm să avem propria noastră opinie,
our own definition of devotional service,
propria noastră definiție asupra serviciului devoțional,
defined according to our conditional terms,
definită conform cu termenii noștri condiționali,
then there will be trouble.
Atunci va fi necaz.
It's 9:30, late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.